So A230775, Esther Beristov on behalf of minor children, petitioner respondent versus Betzalel Beristov, appellant.
Okay, and with that, Ms. Olson, you may begin when you are ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Beristov. This is regarding an order for protection that was issued in Blue Earth County by Judge Gregory Anderson. We are asking for a reversal, either in one of two ways. First, we believe that a total reversal, because there has been some evidentiary issues, which would reverse the order in itself. However, if the court were to disagree with that, we believe there are not enough findings and a remand would be necessary to have a proper finding made in this issue. First and foremost, we are requesting a reversal because there has been significant evidentiary issues within this file. Specifically, this, I would note, is somewhat of a matter of a first impression. While it's been somewhat discussed in non-precedential issues, it's never actually been formally recognized. Specifically, what I'm talking about is the use of an affidavit and the petition for an order for protection as specifically evidence itself. And in this particular case, the only evidence that seems to have been used to make a determination for an order for protection. I note in Ness v. Wolf, which is not a non-precedential case from the Minnesota Court of Appeals on November 2nd, 2020. Again, it was addressed and discussed. However, it was not formally determined what would be at issue. We are asking the court to find that a petition and an affidavit, if it is to be used as evidence, must be introduced under the normal evidentiary rules. That would make sense, as the requirement for an order for protection hearing is under that same standard. So all evidence must be treated equally in this way. Here, what the court did was the court asked the respondent in this matter about the petition and if all of the information in that document was true, and then went on and said, was there anything else to supplement? So there was no other evidence produced by the respondent in this matter when she was requesting her order for protection. The problem is the court did not offer this evidence. The respondent did not offer this evidence, and the
Was
court didn't.
there any objection to the evidence, though?
That comes to the second issue of, because there was no formal request made and there was no statement from the court that this was going to be evidence, as a normal litigant, whether you're a pro se party or an attorney, if you are not aware that this is going to be evidence considered or for consideration, it would be difficult to object or even know that an objection was necessary. I think that is the issue, is it was discussed, but it wasn't discussed as if it was going to be evidence or received. And there is a requirement to not only introduce it, which is the main issue, is that it was never introduced or requested to be received into evidence, and yet somehow it has been. This
So
is not an
what would the if the district court had said, I'm admitting this as an exhibit now, and been more clear about what was going on there, any objection? What would your objection have been?
I believe the objection could be to relevance as well as hearsay within the document. There,
How is it not relevant?
because the issue with relevance on this issue is because this is a petition that has somewhat of a self-serving issue. It's not that it's solely relevance, but it also is the prejudicial nature of the document itself, because it is reporting these incidents which should be testified at a trial. It's basically a circular logic. But the issue comes down to, if it was never introduced into evidence, the court should not have taken it as evidence. And at a minimum, if the court were to do that, the court needed to notify all parties that that was going to happen. It is unfair to the appellant, who is trying to defend the action, who doesn't have the burden of proof, to know that this was going to be offered. It wasn't stated that way, and We require pro se litigants, all pro se litigants, to act as their own attorneys and to be dealt with that way. If an attorney had been present, there absolutely would have been a requirement for that to have been introduced as a proper exhibit. And we are required to do that, and we are supposed to follow it. And the court should have followed that same principle. The issues we run into is, again, this isn't an issue of judicial notice, because there was no judicial notice taken. There was no notification of the parties that judicial notice should have been taken. And that is a requirement as well. The parties need to know that that's what the court is planning to do. So again, there can be an established record of an objection. Now, the court could have overruled an objection, but because no one knew what the court was actually doing with this document, it would be unfair to require the respondent, or excuse me, the appellant in this matter, to have known that and to have made that objection. That's why there is an appeal. Specifically, the other reason why judicial notice can't be taken is because under the evidentiary rule of 201, the facts that would have been given are in dispute. So you can't take judicial notice. The point of judicial notice is for something that's unrefuted or something that's been previously found. There is no finding here. It's a petition and an affidavit. It is exactly what the parties were discussing at the time of the hearing. For us, we have to know what's going to happen. And while we agree that the petition could potentially have been an exhibit, it was not a proper exhibit, and it wasn't an exhibit that was given. And this is similar to situations where parents put in their petition hearsay statements of children, and then they say, I'm going to rest on that petition. This court has not allowed that to come into a situation. This is the same thing with the petition itself. It should not have been used as the evidence. And in this case, it is the sole evidence that was used. There was no other testimony. She did not testify to any other incidents. She didn't even testify to the incidents. She just used what she had originally written with no cross-examination based on it.
So can I ask, just to pinpoint the objections that you're making? One of them seems to be, are you arguing that even if the court said, I am now about to admit and to take into consideration the petition and the sworn petition and affidavit submitted, would that be error? And if so, because are you arguing, I think you're arguing that the party needs to offer it, the district court cannot. Tell me where that requirement comes from, if in fact you're arguing that.
Yes, Your Honor. I am partially arguing that there has to be some introduction of evidence. In the Minnesota Rule of Evidence 104B, and I can quote it, when the relevancy of evidence depends upon the fulfillment of the condition of fact, the court shall admit it upon or in the court's discretion, subject to the introduction of evidence sufficient to support a finding of the fulfillment of the condition. I believe that requirement is you have to introduce it first. You have to say, this is going to be evidence. I want this to be reviewed as the court. It could, if we make a very broad review of it, it could be that the court in its discretion could say that it's going to be evidence. However, I think that would be an impermissible party, as the judge doesn't have a right to introduce its own evidence in a case. They are not the party. They are a neutral person to review what is being presented by the parties of that case. In this instance, no, there was no introduction either way. So it wasn't an introduction by the court, and it certainly was not an introduction by the respondent in this matter. And the mere fact that she filed the petition does not automatically mean that it would become evidence. Her petition and her request was for an ex parte relief, and she received that. And then there was a hearing, a further hearing. And at that point, she needed to prove her case. She needed to prove that the order for protection should be put in place. The petition itself then is not evidence. It is merely a document that she has submitted. And there are requirements, again, to those submissions. My client had been aware that that's what was going to happen, he could have objected. And I agree he hadn't. But that's where the source of the issue lies, because he didn't know. He wasn't aware that this was even being considered an exhibit in and of itself, or what was happening. So I do believe an introduction is required. I also believe that if the party is going to introduce it, because they are a pro se litigant and they have to be treated like an attorney, then they need to follow the rules of evidence and introduce it in the proper way, with the proper foundation laid and all of those things that are required. There was no evidence or testimony of, did she produce the document? And again, I understand that that's somewhat of saying, well, we understand that she produced it. We know she wrote it, but that's actually not true. We don't know that. That's why we have these identifying procedures. That's why we say these things. So then the appellant in this case can properly object to it, say what's at issue, say that it can't be authenticated. There are a whole bunch of things that could have happened but didn't, because there was no knowledge of what was being introduced or what was being going to be used as evidence. And again, she didn't testify to anything. So without this, she would not have won her order for protection, because there was nothing there.
I just want to explore your argument a little bit. You suggested, you know, that this court has only in non-presidential decisions said that a petition is, you know, fair game. Are you asking us to determine that the district court can never consider the petition in an OFP matter, you know, once it's at the hearing stage?
No, I think it could be used as evidence, but I think it needs to be introduced as evidence, as a proper document, similar to any other, like a recording that would have been submitted. You then have to resubmit it, a recording. It's an evidence. It can be, but it has to be done in a proper way. So there has never actually been a full resolution on this issue, in that Ness v. Wolf, it actually wasn't determined. They said this is something that hasn't been really discussed. We are asking for a precedential opinion that if a petition is going to be used as evidence, that it be done in the proper evidentiary way, that it be introduced in the proper way that it's supposed to be, and that the court recognize it under the record, so then all parties are aware of what's going on, and it effectively allows the parties to do what they need to do. Now, if that had happened and my client didn't object, we'd be sitting in a very different position, I think, because we wouldn't have this issue. I would have to concede the argument that he didn't object. And as you know, if you fail to object at a certain stage, then it's waived. But in this situation, if he isn't aware something is happening, I don't believe it's possible to say he should have objected or he should have known, because he didn't know that it was used fully or that it was considered evidence until he received the order. And at that point, he appealed. So I believe he perfected his appeal at that point, because that's what he knew had happened.
It seems though, I mean, the district court asked Ms. Beristoff, you submitted a lengthy affidavit to the court in the form of a petition. Do you remember? Yes. Do you remember the contents? Yes. Is all the information you provide in that document true and correct? Yes, it's true. My second question, if you want to supplement it, there's one thing, and then she supplements it. I mean, I'm trying to find the prejudice here. It seems kind of unlikely that self-represented party came in thinking, oh, unless it gets admitted under rule blah blah blah, it's not going to be considered. I mean, considering that he knew the contents of it, he responds to it, the court talks about it and asks her to affirm that what she said in that is true. I mean, there was no mystery about what this hearing was about and what her claims were about.
I would respectfully disagree. Mr. Beristoff actually didn't know what was fully going on or what was happening. He is a litigant who does not speak English. He did not.
I mean, he knew. I'm saying that this was about what she had said in her petition.
He didn't understand what she had fully said in her petition.
Right, but he knew that the hearing was about her claims and her petition. I know he said that he didn't fully understand what the petition said, but in terms of like that seems to be a separate question from like the language issue or whatever it was that impaired his ability to understand.
I understand. I understand, Your Honor. However, again, in order for protection, once the request has been made or the court finds that a hearing needs to be set, it is the burden of the petitioner, in this case, the respondent in this matter, it is her burden to prove that an order for petition is necessary. What she files when she files, and I see I will be out of time. May I finish my answer? Thank you.
Yes, please finish.
In this situation, she petitioned for an ex parte order. That is different than an actual hearing for an order for protection, a subsequent one. What she asked for was immediate relief, finding that there was an ex parte issue, and it was deemed under, if everything is true that she said, it was deemed that it was necessary. Then the party has a right to either request a hearing, or the court can issue a hearing if there are some concerns. In this case with children, a hearing was addressed. That doesn't mean that everything in that petition would be offered as evidence, or that a subsequent one may be necessary. That's why we have these rules of procedure and we have these evidence rules. So when my client comes in, the appellant, he knows what to expect. He knows there was going to be a hearing regarding an order for protection, but he didn't know that the petition would be considered all the evidence or the sole evidence or what was happening. So I would respectfully disagree, because her petition actually is for relief of ex parte, not for evidence at an order for protection. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Olson. Thank you for the brief that you submitted and argument today. We will take it into consideration. The case is submitted and an opinion will be issued in the statutory timeframe. So with that ends this morning's oral calendar, and the court is in recess.